I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hello everyone, this is Bob Main, and you are tuning in to the Handgun World Show, episode number 52 to be exact. This is podcasting freedom at its best, talking about the Second Amendment, talking about firearms. This is a practical show. If you're relatively new, you're going to find out that I don't do a lot of technical stuff on this show. This is common sense, and this is about owning and shooting firearms. I am not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm not a combat trainer. I don't get into a whole lot of that stuff. I'm just a private guy. I'm a Yankee behind a microphone with a gun. For those of you who don't know, if you're kind of new, I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, transplanted myself to the Republic of Texas in 1993. So actually, right now, I'm on the road traveling through Texas on some business. My home is the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You're going to get practical experience from me. So what am I going to talk about? Well, I'm going to continue a little bit of what I said in episode number 50 on long guns. I know this is the Handgun World Show, but I think we should all own rifles and shotguns as well. So 90% of the time you're going to hear me talk about handguns, but this is one of the 10% of the time of the podcast that I'm going to do on long guns. So I just got done doing shotguns. Now let's talk a little bit about rifles. That's going to be the first segment of this show. A listener emailed me and asked me what did I think about owning a rifle for defense, what kind of a rifle, what kind of caliber, what kind of capacity, things like that. You know, this is just as difficult of a question for me to answer as it is when somebody asks, Bob, what do you think about my first handgun, or what kind of handguns should I own? This is so subjective. This is so much related to personal preference. But the question was asked, and I realized when I was going through all my shows, I had not really done a show specifically on rifles. So here goes. Let me tackle the question the best I can. I'm going to urge you to do something, folks. I'm going to urge you to take what you hear from me. Take the best and leave the rest. My old mentor taught me that. My mentor by the name of Tom Hopkins. He taught me, take the best and leave the rest. What he meant by that is most people have some pretty good things to say when they have experience in a subject, but he said, you may not agree with all of it. And he said, so take the best, take what you do agree with, use it, leave the rest, throw it out in the trash. My opinion will come through. Do the same thing with this show. So let's dive into the first segment here, and that is rifles. First of all, I think everybody needs to have a rifle. Okay? In episode 50, I made the point that I think everybody needs to have at least one shotgun. I think you should have a rifle. As a matter of fact, some of you I know who listen to this show, you also listen to my survival show that I do. I do a common sense based preparedness show on survival, common sense survival. I don't get into a lot of conspiracy theories, no tinfoil hat type thinking. I talk about how to prepare yourself for unexpected events. And when we carry guns, isn't that really what we do? We carry a gun because we're preparing for an unexpected event that might happen. An attack, violence on us, where we may have to defend ourselves. So I kind of look at firearms as just another survival prep that I have to do. And that's kind of my mind. I grew up that way, folks. I grew up on a hobby farm in Wisconsin. I grew up very self-sufficient. My parents taught me self-sufficiency, and we were also very big firearms enthusiasts. We hunted a lot. We hunted every chance we could get, and I sure missed that. I live in the suburbs of Dallas now. Can't do a whole lot of hunting in the suburbs of Dallas. In fact, I can't do any. And because of my busy travel schedule, I just don't get out there in the outdoors as much as I used to, but I have a strong background in that. So I look at everything from that type of a perspective. So that's what you're going to get from me. You're not going to get a combat perspective because I don't have a lot of experience with that. But I know a little bit about combat rifles, and I own a combat rifle that I'm going to talk about. So back to my original point that I think that everybody should own a rifle. At the very minimum, own some kind of a good bolt action or lever action center fire rifle. You should also own a .22. I think you should have a 22, a center fire rifle, and a shotgun as part of your long gun collection, or part of your gun collection. And I'll tell you why I believe that. Because, first of all, with a center fire rifle, you probably have the ultimate long-range self-defense weapon. And I know that there's going to be a very rare case where you may have to take a self-defense shot more than, say, 50 yards. I just got done talking about that in my shotgun show. But in case that time comes, you will probably going to want to have a good center fire rifle. Something like a 223, something like a 7.62 by 39, something like a 308. Now, my recommendation for a center fire rifle caliber would be to own one of those that I just mentioned. A 7.62 by 39, which is commonly the caliber that AK-47s and SKSs shoot. A 22 caliber rifle, rimfire rifle, obviously. Or a 223 or a 308. So I guess there's four calibers. But when you're talking about center fire, 308, 7.62, and 223. Why do I recommend those three? Well, first of all, 7.62 by 39 and 223 are common military calibers. The advantage is, first of all, both of those are proven man stoppers. You know what? I don't want to get into this argument, 223 versus 7.62 by 39. Okay, if you want to read that kind of stuff, you want to, you know, look at the different sides of that issue, get on the internet and just Google 7.62 versus 223 ammo. You'll read 5,000 different opinions on it. I think they're both proven man stoppers. I mean, the AK-47's been doing the job for a long time, hasn't it? So has the M16 or the civilian version called the AR-15. They've both been getting the job done for a long time. It really depends on whether you believe in a high-velocity rifle or a larger bullet rifle. Okay? Those who believe in the larger, slower bullets would tend to choose a 7.62. Those that believe in the lighter, faster, higher velocity bullets choose the 223. You know, ballistically, both of them have their merits. You know, it's kind of like the argument between .45 ACP and 9mm. Do you believe in big and slow, or do you believe in small and fast bullets? Again, they both have been getting the job done a long time. Take your pick. 308 is also excellent. All three that I've just mentioned are military calibers, and ammo is readily available. That's my big point right there. Is, you know, the ammo supply, folks, is starting to get better. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I think it's starting to get better. I mean, just yesterday I picked up three boxes of 380 for my 380 handgun, no problem. Hollow Points, FMJ, I picked it up over at Academy Sports and Outdoors, and they had quite a bit of it. So, you know, if 380 is starting to hit the shelves again, you know, the rifle ammo is definitely out there. And as a matter of fact, they had plenty of 223 at the Academy store that I was at. It's starting to come back. The ammo scare, the ammo shortage, you know, people overreacted, and I think it's pretty obvious now that I would say the Obama administration is not going to probably do anything in the near future to start regulating ammo and guns. I think they got way too much on their hand. They got to fix this country before they start messing around with guns and ammo, but that's a whole nother podcast. Whew, I don't want to get my blood boiling on that subject. But those three calibers are going to be much easier to find than something like a 300 Win Mag or a strange caliber like a 243 or whatever it is. You know, the stranger calibers, the more offbeat calibers, they might be great hunting calibers, but and ballistically they might be superior to the three that I've just mentioned. But you know what, folks? You're talking about stopping a human. Okay, you're not talking about stopping an elephant or an elk. If you are an elk hunter or an elephant hunter, then get specialized guns for that. But I'm talking about defense. 223, 308, 7.62, they'll stop a man just fine. All three of them have been doing it for years and years and years. So own one of those. Now, it begs the question, well, you might be thinking, okay, Bob, of those three, what type of a rifle should I get? Depends on your budget. I'll tell you what I own. I own an AK in 7.62 by 39. Okay? I own a Bulgarian AK-47. I wouldn't say it's the cream of the crop, but it's a pretty decent AK-47. It's not a cheap one. I spent a medium amount of money on it. It is plenty good enough for me. I also have a Ruger Mini 14, which shoots the 223. I got the new tactical version. The new ones with the thicker barrels and the flash hider on the front of it. You know, folks, I got to tell you, I feel very confident with either of those guns for their intended purpose of self-defense. Neither one of them are tack drivers. Neither one of them are going to give me two-inch groups at 100 yards. They're not. I'll frustrate myself trying to shoot two-inch groups at 100 yards. But you know what? That's not why I own these rifles. I own these rifles in case some thugs or group of thugs are threatening me from a long distance, and I got to put them down and put them down now. And they're out of shotgun range. That's why I own these rifles. Now, some people argue that a 223 is a good suburban defensive rifle. I don't know. You know, some people say the 223s don't over-penetrate as bad as 7.62s or 308s. That's debatable. But there's an argument that I wanted to throw out there for you and let you think about that. Okay? If the stink hits the fan and I'm in trouble, and I've got a flea, for example. See, I think about that stuff, too. What if all of a sudden, you know, the authorities show up in my neighborhood and say, hey, there's a major problem. We got to evacuate this neighborhood. You got to get out, and we don't know when we're going to allow you to come back. There's three guns I'm taking with me, folks, if that happens. Three guns. You want to know what those three guns are? You probably guessed it. I'm taking my Glock 19, I'm taking my 12-gauge shotgun, and I'm going to take my Ruger Mini 14 that shoots 223. If I had to pack light, that's what I'm going to take, those three. I hope I can pack heavier. I hope I can take my entire gun collection. But if that's not the case, the three that I'm taking are my Glock 19, my Ruger Mini 14, and my 12-gauge shotgun. With those three, I can get myself out of any mess. I'm confident I can get myself out of almost any mess I would ever find myself in. So for defensive purposes, folks, don't get hung up on the fact that you got to have a $2,000 rifle that's going to shoot inch-and-a-half groups or one-inch groups at 100 yards. Now, I'm not making fun of you if you own a couple $1,000 AR-15 with another $1,000 worth of accessories on it. If it's reliable and it works well and it serves you well, wonderful. I hope you're by my side fighting with me. Okay? But am I saying that you have to run out and get one of those right away? No. I got my Ruger Mini 14 on sale. I watched some sales and I got it for $529. I got my Bulgarian AK-47 for $599. If you're on a real budget, folks, go get yourself a lever action 30-30. That's a caliber I forgot to mention, but let's not forget about the original assault rifle, huh? The original assault rifle, lever action 30-30. In its day, it was a badass assault rifle, folks. In its day. And you know what? I would not feel underdefended if I had a lever action 30-30. That's ammo you can find anywhere also. It's more of a hunting caliber than it is a self-defense caliber. But if it can put down a white-tailed deer from 100 yards away, I'd say a good marksman with a lever-action 30-30 can put down a human from 100 yards away. You can get some Hornady Lever Evolution ammunition with those plastic polymer tips, and it's a pointed bullet, so it's going to have better ballistics at 100 yards, and you're going to be very well defended with that. Even if you have to go get a bolt action 308, you know, you could be great with that, a bolt action 308. If you do your part, one or two shots is going to take care of your adversary. You know, some people think they're going to fight some kind of a Red Dawn war, you know, where they got to have a 30-round magazine, otherwise they're not very well defended. It's got to be 30 rounds, and they got to have 30 rounds of 223 or 30 rounds of 7.62, or by golly, the zombies are going to come and take them away. There's a lot of that thinking going on out there. Do I think it's realistic? No, I really don't. Could it happen? Is it possible? Yeah, I think it's highly unlikely that you're going to have to go through three magazines of 30 rounds each to fight off a horde of zombies trying to invade you and your household. I think the more likely scenario is that maybe if there's some kind of a natural disaster that comes through your area, and maybe the federal authorities don't do a good enough job of cleaning up the mess and taking care of things. Sound familiar? Like Hurricane Katrina, ring a bell to anybody? In that situation, as you have probably remembered witnessing, there can be a lot of violence going on. There can be a lot of looters. There can be a lot of burglars, a lot of thieves. People who have not prepared turn violent. The people who don't have anything start going after the people that do have something. And in that case, it's entirely possible where you may have to take a longer range shot just to keep people off of your property, and keep them away from your stuff. And if they are armed, you know, I just had this conversation with somebody a couple days ago. I had a conversation with somebody, a friend of mine. What would we do if someone was 50 or 60 yards away from us with a gun, possibly a rifle, and they were prepared to shoot at us? What would we do? I would return fire, folks. I would not wait. You know, now, if you're an attorney listening to this, and you say, Bob, you're going to get yourself in trouble doing that, you know what? Like the old saying goes, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. If somebody is pointing any kind of a gun at me from 50 yards, I think my humble opinion is they want to kill me. They want to harm me. And I have the right to defend myself. And especially in the state of Texas, I definitely have the right to defend myself. So if you have a bolt-action gun, for example, don't underestimate its defensive capability. And somebody who has practiced, somebody who's given their bolt-action rifle a 1,000-round trigger job, probably knows how to use it and use it effectively. Lever-action rifles. You know what I just saw in a store the other day? A Marlin 308 lever-action. Pretty sweet. That's very tempting. I tell you what, a Marlin 308 lever action. It looked just like a Marlin 336 3030, but it shoots a 308. You ever see a lever action shooter who knows what they're doing? They can shoot those guns pretty fast. Go watch a cowboy action match once. Watch those shooters. Watch those cowboy shooters in a competition. Watch how fast they can shoot a lever action gun. So as Clint Smith says, you don't need to have a $2,000 AR-15 to defend yourself with a rifle. If you were to ask me, Bob, pick one rifle, I told you, it'd be my AK-47 or my Ruger 223. It'd be a hard choice. But the reason I say the Ruger 223 is it's a lot lighter. Okay? Now, since I'm on the subject of AKs, for example, I happen to prefer the 20-round magazines in my AK rather than the 30-round magazines. The 20-rounders are so much smaller and lighter that if I have to go mobile, if I've got to move, I would much rather carry the 20-round magazines with me, and I can carry more of them. And it gives me better maneuverability with my rifle. But for that reason is why I like anything that shoots a 223. AR-15s are very easy to be mobile with, right? Anybody who has served our country as a soldier, you know how mobile you can be with the M16. And if you are a soldier who has served our country, folks, thank you very much to all the law enforcement people and military people and ex-military people who do listen to this show. You know, thank you. I very much appreciate what you do for this country. I very much appreciate the fact that you men and women put your butts on the line so that I can sleep well at night, so that my family can sleep well at night, and so that I can do this podcast. I regret that I did not serve in the United States military. I wish I had done it. Having said that, those of you who have, you know how mobile you can be with a 223. Any kind of a rifle. And those magazines are very light. So that's my thinking right there. That's how I approach it. Regardless of which one you choose, make sure you're well stocked with hollow points or soft point ammo. With rifles, I will say that obviously they have a greater ability to over-penetrate. Although you've heard me say what I feel about the over-penetration argument before. I think that argument is way overblown. I think over-penetration is an overblown argument. I really do. I'll say that again. More people are going to miss with their gun than they are going to hit. It's a proven fact. Even with rifles, you can miss easily. And folks, if you miss your target with a rifle, that bullet's going to keep on going and going and going. They will travel a very long way. As a matter of fact, that bullet will probably go farther if you miss than it would over penetrating your attacker. So all these people out there that say, oh, you got to be sure you don't have a round that's going to over-penetrate because you could be in trouble if it hits an innocent bystander. Well, yeah, but you can be in trouble if it hits an innocent bystander if you shoot at somebody and you miss. You're responsible for every bullet that comes out of your gun, whether it hits your target or not. And since I'm on that subject, this is why I say you should own a centerfire rifle. Because they're easy to shoot. A rifle with a long sight radius, a better sight radius than probably anything else that you can put in your hands. Even if it's a 16-inch barrel, you still have a heck of a good sight radius when compared to a handgun. And you're going to need it when you're taking longer shots. Especially .223 rifles. They're easier for most people to master shooting. AKs, they can recoil quite a bit. Now, if you're taking 5 shots, 10 shots, 20 shots with an AK, you might not feel it too much. But go to the range one day and run about 300 rounds through your AK nonstop. Your 7.62 AK, shoot at 300 rounds. Tell me what your shoulder feels like when you get done. So for that reason, for me, the .223 gets the call. I can practice more with it. I don't beat myself up shooting 200 rounds out of my .223. And any rifle I've ever shot chambered in .223 is pleasant to shoot. Makes a lot of noise, but pleasant on the body. So take that for what it's worth. Now, let's get back to the survival mindset again. Obviously, having something like a bolt-action 308, a lever-action 30-30, or a lever 308, or even a bolt-action 30-06 is a good long gun to have in your collection for hunting purposes. .223s don't make real good big-game hunting rifles. They just don't quite have the ballistics necessary to bring down big game. It's been done. Yes, it has been done. People have shot deer and so forth with .223. It's not ideal. If I'm in a hunting situation and I'm hunting big game, I want that bolt-action 308. They're highly accurate. Bolt-action guns are going to be more accurate than probably any other centerfire rifle you can pick up. That's the other thing, folks. If you're not used to rifles, let me tell you something right off the bat. Out of the box, a bolt-action is generally going to be more accurate than any semi-auto or any lever action. Okay? The way that action locks up, a good quality bolt, a decent quality bolt action, even if a Mossberg 308, for example, or a Remington 308 or 30-06, just a medium-priced bolt action hunting rifle are going to be highly, highly accurate. That's what I want in my hands if I'm hunting. Self-defense? Like I said, I'll take my Ruger Mini 14 with a bunch of 20-round magazines any day. Any day over a bolt action, if I've got the choice. Now, you might be thinking, Bob, I've only got the money to buy one rifle. That's it. Right now, I'm on a budget. I'm trying to pay off my debt. I'm trying to be a good, responsible citizen and not be in debt, so I don't want to go throwing a bunch of guns on credit cards. What do? I don't have a whole lot to spend. If that's you, if that's the case, I'd say there's two rifles I'd recommend. Go find on sale a good Marlin 336 30-30. Or go find a good bolt action 308. I think there's Mossbergs out there now you can buy for $300 or $400. I'm not 100% sure on that price, but search around. Okay? I would say go for the lever action because They're accurate enough. You can fire them relatively fast if you know what you're doing and you practice, and give it that 1,000-round trigger job. Just like a handgun, you'll be better at firing that rifle on the 1,000th round than you were on the first round. So if you're going for a budget gun, but if you can save your pennies, and if you can find a good deal on something like a Ruger Mini 14 or something like a good quality AK-47 or even just a decent quality AR-15, you'll also be well served. And when I say a decent quality AR-15, the prices have come back down, folks. You can get a good AR-15 for probably around $850. You can get one good enough. You may not get a tac driver. You may not get the best tactical rifle in the world, but you'll get something good enough for ordinary self-defense for probably about $8.50. But if that's over your budget, I'm telling you what, you can get a good lever-action rifle, and if you shop around, you can probably get them for $300 or less. And if you really know what you're doing and know what you're looking for, or you take someone with you who knows what they're doing and knows what they're looking at, you can find pawn shops in various places that have just good hunting-style rifles that will serve you good enough, in my humble opinion, in a self-defense situation. It's better than not having a rifle at all. Let me put it that way. It's better than not having a rifle at all. Keep in mind, talking about rifles, we're talking about a item, a product, a self-defense tool that you might use maybe in 5% of your self-defense situations. See, let's talk about numbers and odds for a minute, folks. And then I'll move on to segment number two. The odds of you having to shoot somebody are pretty low anyway. I mean, there's a lot of other things that can kill us, folks, before somebody trying to shoot us or harm us or beat us up. Cancer, heart disease, stroke, automobile accidents. We've got a lot higher chance of dying in those than we do somebody assaulting us or robbing us or mugging us or shooting at us. But I tell you what, you got a greater chance of dying from violence than you do from a natural disaster. If you don't believe me, look it up. The FBI crime statistics and the CDC statistics show that definitely a violent encounter is far more likely than dying in some kind of an earthquake, tsunami, tornado, hurricane, anything like that. So it is definitely something that you have to prepare for. But in all of those cases where you would have to fire a gun to defend yourself, I would bet probably 5% or less you're going to have to pull out a rifle. So these guys that go out and spend thousands and thousands of dollars and they own three different tactical AR-15s, that's great for sport. That's great for going to tactical carbine matches. That's great for just having a heck of a lot of fun. But I don't think from a practicality standpoint, I don't think they're going to have to go reaching for those tactical $3,000 ARs very often. I would say less than 5% of the time. Most of the time, they're going to be pulling out their pocket pistol, or they're going to be pulling out the compact pistol that they're carrying on their belt or in their pocket. They'll be pulling that out a lot more than they're going to be going even for their shotgun or for their rifle. Just my humble opinion, take the best and leave the rest. All right, now one more thing I want to say about ammo before I move into the next segment of this podcast. The reason I like to recommend 7.62, 223, or 308 is because they are military calibers and because they are calibers that law enforcement use. The chances of ammo makers stopping the production of those types of ammo is slim to none. Okay, even if our government does get crazy and start putting some restrictions on ammo, you're probably still always going to be able to find 223, 7.62, or 308 somewhere. It's the strange, weird, uncommon calibers that are going to be difficult to find. You're probably also going to always be able to find 30-30 and 30-06. Those are old standards that have been around for years and years and years, and gun stores and ammunition stores carry plenty of those calibers for hunters as well, and they will serve you okay for self-defense. So that's why I urge that you stick with a common caliber that is not likely to be cut off by government restrictions. Same with handgun calibers. 9mm 40 and 45 ACP, and of course now even 380, being used more and more by law enforcement and military. A lot of cops are using 380 pocket pistols for backups, folks, for backup weapons. And if law enforcement uses it and military uses it, the ammo makers are going to make it. So stick with calibers that are widely used, such as the ones that I've mentioned. Okay? That's what I wanted to say on rifles. I may have some more thoughts between now and the next podcast. And certainly, as always, folks, if you've got recommendations, I would certainly love to hear them. I'm an open-minded person. My mind's like a parachute. It works best when it is open, and that is me. I like constructive criticism, good, bad, or indifferent. Send me some comments on what you think about my ideas on rifles and owning a rifle for self-defense. Use the comments page on the website. And before I go to the next segment, let me use this opportunity to go ahead and take care of a couple of announcements. As you know, I don't make this show real commercial, but there are a couple things I do want to cover on each podcast. The website is handgunworld.com. Check out my YouTube channel. I just put a YouTube video up there recently about my Glock 19 with True Glow TFO sights and some stippled magazine extensions. Check that out. Let me know what you think. I got a few other videos on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search Handgun World Show. You'll find it. I'll also put a link to the YouTube channel in the show notes at handgunworld.com. If you're using iTunes, folks, I've been getting some great comments from you. Thank you very much. Keep rating the podcast. Write a review. Let me know what you think. The biggest reason I ask you to do that is because if you like the show, people who are passing by and searching for gun podcasts on iTunes, they're going to read those comments. I do. When I look at a podcast, I read the comments. And again, folks, even if there's some constructive criticism you want to give me, I don't mind if you put that on iTunes or if you put it on the website. Because it gives me a chance to improve the show. This is your show. It's not mine. I'm just the guy behind the microphone. And the last announcement I want to make is if you like to get on forums and talk about firearms and ammunition and things, we have a pretty active forum over at the other podcast that I do, the survival podcast that I do, which is called Today's Survival Show. Today's Survival Show on common sense, modern survival techniques and so forth. That, if I'll put a link to that in the posting as well. Todayssurvival.com/forum is the web address. And we have a whole weapons section there. Even if preparing is not your cup of tea, come join us for the gun discussion. It's a great gun discussion on there. We're adding new topics all the time. And you can interact with a lot of people who listen to this show already, and you can interact with me over there on that forum as well. Okay? That's it for the announcements. And let's go ahead and move into segment number 2 of episode 52 of the Handgun World Show. Okay? I want to play an audio soundbite for you. But I want to set this up because you're going to hear from a San Jose police officer, and you're going to hear from somebody from the BATF, and you're also going to hear from a Los Angeles law enforcement official. And these people make some very, very good points about rifles. This is very educational. I'm going to have you listen to a 10-minute audio soundbite. This is also a YouTube video. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. So please, do me a favor. When you get done listening to this podcast, go to handgunworld.com, click the video link, and watch the video, because some of what this man is talking about is too hard to explain on an audio soundbite. You have to actually see it. But he's going to address the complete fallacy of assault rifles. And I'm going to set this up. I'm going to say something here that I'm going to try real hard to control myself, folks. I'm going to try to not let my blood start boiling like crazy, because I want to talk about a subject called assault rifles. And I have some comments after this soundbite. But I just want to say to everybody listening to this podcast, and anybody who might listen to this podcast in the future, there is no such thing as an assault rifle that ordinary citizens can buy. Assault is not a rifle. Assault is an action. Let me say that again. Assault is not a piece of equipment. Assault is an action that you take. Now, there is only one type of a rifle that is a true assault rifle. And I think I might even argue with this guy a little bit. But he's a very knowledgeable law enforcement official in San Jose, and he really makes some good points. So I won't try to debate the point. All right? I'm just going to say that a semi-automatic rifle is not an assault rifle. It is not. I have some good comments I want to share with you about this, but I want you to listen to this 10 minutes first. And again, I'll say it again because I'm not going to say it when I come back on. Go watch this video. I'm going to link to this video in the show notes. Please watch it after you get done listening to this podcast. But here you go. This is some good educational stuff you need to know about rifles. I'll be back on when it's over. Here you go.
Hello, my name is Leroy Pyle. I'm a police officer in San Jose, California. And during most of my 25-year career, I've been involved in firearms training, a little training, education, and also competition. As a result, I've also gotten involved with private citizens using firearms, a lot of safety schools, and a lot of competition. I'm familiar with some of the controversy involved with firearms now, a lot of emotions. In fact, we're about an hour and a half away from Stockton, California, where I'm sure you're aware of a recent tragedy. I don't mean to belittle that tragedy. I can share those emotions. About a week after that, I had two of my partners killed on the streets of San Jose, so I understand the emotions. But part of my job as a police officer for all these years has been to cut through the emotions and get to the facts. That's the only way you can settle an issue. You have to have the truth. And I'd share a little bit of the facts with you, because I honestly feel that some of the emotions here have impaired any ability to make a good judgment. I have some firearms available that I'd like to show you. I have some in fully automatic, I have some in semi-automatic, and I have some that were designed for hunting. I'd like to show you a comparison, and I think if you have a little better understanding of what these firearms really are for, what they do, what they look like, you too can maybe cut through some of the emotions and make what I hope would be a good decision. The confusion and misunderstanding over firearms is a result of the mislabeling. I have firearms here on the table. I have a fully automatic assault rifle, and many times the press likes to use those words, trigger words, if I might add, assault rifle, military, fully automatic. This is a fully automatic assault rifle. This is banned, it's prohibited, and limited almost virtually to police and military use. A citizen cannot go into the store and purchase this. And yet, this is usually one that's displayed on your television set. These are usually the terms used by the news media. Then they'll pick up a semi-automatic firearm. This is a semi-automatic firearm. The primary difference is that the assault rifle, the fully automatic firearm, you pull a trigger once and it will repeatedly fire and will continue to fire until all rounds are expended. This is a semi-automatic firearm. You fire once with each pull of the trigger. If you notice, these two firearms look alike. They look very much alike. They operate entirely differently. This one is legal, semi-automatic. This one is an illegal, fully automatic. They look alike. Here, I have a hunting rifle. This is also semi-automatic and one used for hunting game. This also, being semi-automatic, fires one round with each pull of the trigger. If you notice, these two do not look alike, but they function alike. They are virtually the same, only cosmetically different. It's important to keep that in mind. A person will say, this is fully automatic. The uninformed, most of the time the press, will refer to this as a fully automatic assault rifle and this as a fully automatic assault rifle. Please, by definition, this is the assault rifle. This is the only one that's fully automatic. It's prohibited for purchase in the United States except by police and law enforcement. Let me show you exactly what I mean. I've got my hearing protection here. We'll take these firearms out and I'll shoot them one at a time, and you can see for yourself just exactly how they operate and exactly how they're alike in some ways and very different in other ways. This is the fully automatic firearm. It's an AK-47. Primary feature is with one pull of the trigger, it will fire repeatedly. It'll fire until you either release the trigger or you expend all the rounds. Let me show you. This It's a semi-automatic firearm. A look-alike, but very much different. One pull of the trigger, you get one round. You get another round, you have to pull the trigger again. Let me show you that. This, too, is a semi-automatic. The feature with semi-automatic, one pull of the trigger, one round. If you notice, the action, very similar to the other firearms, but very much different from the fully automatic rifle. This, too, is a hunting rifle. Again, one pull of the trigger, one round. Semi-automatic is just that, semi-automatic. One pull of the trigger, one round. That's a technology that's over 100 years old. If you ban that technology, you ban about 20 million firearms. Let's take a little closer look at them. This is the semi-automatic technology I referred to. You notice cosmetically there is a difference, but if you get to the working parts, the actual action, they're identical. In fact, let me show you just exactly how identical. This is the military look-alike. If you take off a cover, the working part compared to this hunting rifle, take off the cover, and the working parts are identical. Again, semi-automatic technology. One pull of the trigger, one round. Entirely different from the military fully automatic assault rifles. I'd like to show you how a simple cosmetic change could lend to the confusion in this attempt to try to define something as an assault rifle. This is a very popular, very common semi-automatic rifle. It's in a very popular and common caliber, that's caliber 223. I'd like you to watch while I just change the looks and see if you can't see how it might get a little confusing. As you can see, just changing from wood to plastic makes a big difference in its appearance and probably would even change a person's opinion. And is that what makes a difference, whether it has a wooden stock or if it has a plastic stop and maybe a bipod? Actually, just like in those other firearms that I was demonstrating, the action is the same. The semi-automatic mechanism is common to millions of firearms, not just the rifle. I'm sure any of you shoot trapper skeet, you know that a semi-automatic shotgun is very, very popular. For home defense or for target practice, the semi-automatic pistol is very, very popular. In fact, much more popular nowadays than the revolver is. Terms like assault rifle are hard to define. I don't know what an assault rifle is. I doubt very much if a member of BATF could tell you exactly what an assault rifle is.
Any type of legislation that's framed and drafted in relation to assault, what we're referring to here this morning is assault or paramilitary type weapons, there will be an inherent difficulty in drafting this. And the difficulty is that it's going to be very hard to draw a clear distinction between what we have as an assault type rifle and a semi-automatic sporting weapon. The assault weapon has a very menacing appearance to it, but this gun technologically, as far as how it fires, is pretty much the same as a sporting semi-automatic rifle, with the exception that this firearm has an exotic type appearance to it. Put a standard type stock on it and remove the bayonet mount, it would also even have the appearance of a sporting type weapon.
Frequently hear a reference to the fact that a semi-automatic rifle can be easily converted to fully automatic. That's not true.
Why? Because these military style assault weapons of today are not easily and readily convertible without extensive knowledge of modifications to the weapon and or a substitution of available parts. Now, my 12 years within the unit, considering the enormous amount of firearms that we have taken into custody, and that's over 50,000, I would say, and these including the ones from the hardcore gangs and from the drug dealers, our unit has never, ever had one AK-47 converted, one Ruger Mini 14 converted, an H&K 9193, never converted. An AR-180, never converted. So this media blitz of many of these assault weapons or supposedly military-style weapons are being converted to full automatic is not true.
So millions of law-abiding citizens own this semi-automatic technology. It would really be a shame if you legislated against that technology, and it would be really sad if that legislation was as a result of just some confusion and misunderstanding, and especially by mislabeling. I hope I've been able to help you with some of this information.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. I'll tell you what I really like about what this man said. I like the fact that he pretty much blasted the media fallacies and the gun haters out there that want to paint anybody that owns a semi-automatic rifle as some kind of a crazy militia dude that wants to go around shooting people up. And it's just a big ploy, folks. It's a big ploy that the gun haters use. But I also like the fact, and when you watch the video, you're going to see what I mean. You're going to see how he takes a regular Mini 14 with a wood hunting stock. And just within a couple of minutes, he puts a folding synthetic stock on it with a bipod and makes it look like a mean, nasty, scary rifle. But yet it's the same damn gun. The same action and everything. Same thing, just looks scary. Just because something has a pistol grip and a folding stock doesn't mean that it's any more dangerous than an ordinary hunting rifle that's in semi-automatic form. Okay, so that's the other thing that I really like. And so to wrap this up, I want to share this. A couple of suggestions I had while that audio soundbite was playing that I thought of that I wanted to share with you, and that is another good rifle you might want to consider is, for example, like a Sega 308. Sega, S-A-I-G-A. It's a Russian manufacturer. They're made in the Ishmash factory in Russia where the original AKs were manufactured. And what I like about the Sega is it's an AK action. So it's a very reliable action, but the stock that they put on them is an ordinary hunting stock. So it doesn't look mean. See, you have to understand something. If you have to use your rifle in self-defense, you're going to get dragged into court, just like if you use any other gun in self-defense. And the less mean that your rifle looks, there's a good argument that the more politically correct that your rifle looks, they might go easier on you. And that's another thing that I like about my Ruger Mini 14. I've kept the stock that came with it out of the factory. I have the regular synthetic stock that looks like a hunting stock. Looks like a hunting gun. All right, looks like a deer gun. Now, the flash hider on the end of it makes it look a little bit evil, but it doesn't have a pistol grip stock. And there's something to be said about rifles that don't have pistol grip stocks. And there's a lot of good semi-automatic rifles that would serve you well as a defensive rifle. A Sega is one of them. Some people pronounce it Saiga. Some have different pronunciations for it. But look it up. S-A-I-G-A. Sega 308. I think out of the box, it comes with a 5-round magazine. That's plenty. That's plenty, folks. 5 rounds of 308 is plenty. You're probably not going to need any more than that. Some people that own Mini 14s just use the regular 5-round magazine that came with it. So the less scary that your rifle looks might also be a good thing as well. But I think it's important that everybody understand that assault is not really a rifle. It's a behavior. It's an action that one person or a team of people do on something else. Like, for example, the military, they will assault their enemy. But that's war. What we're talking about, a semi-automatic rifle used for home defense or hunting, is not war, so it's not assault. All right, so anyway, I'm not going to get on a high horse about that. It's a sensitive subject to me, as you can probably tell. And, you know, what are they going to do, ban semi-automatic pistols because they're assault pistols? Like the man said, they'd be banning 20 or 30 million firearms. That's crazy. There's no difference between a semi-automatic pistol and a semi-automatic rifle, except for obviously the rifle has more power. The rifle has a lot more stopping power. But in terms of the ability to fire it rapidly, they're about the same. So you may want to consider something like a Sega in 308 or a 7.62 or a Mini 14 or a Mini 30 with a 5-round magazine. Or even just a hunting rifle, a semi-automatic 30-06 or a semi-automatic 308 hunting rifle. I think you get the point that I'm trying to make about rifles. Again, something that you're going to use, you know, less than 5% of the time if you have to fire a gun at somebody. Now, there's another point I want to make about the over-penetration stuff, because I don't want you to get the wrong idea, and I thought about it when I was listening to that audio clip, that I'm not saying you shouldn't worry about over-penetration. You do have to worry about that, obviously. And something like high-powered rifles, of course, they have a far greater tendency. Even if you're shooting a .308 at somebody, even if they're wearing a protective vest, that .308 is probably going to at least knock them down. And they're probably not going to get up for a while. You're going to have a chance to flee. Some will argue that the .308 round would go through a vest, a protective vest. I don't know. I don't know enough about ballistics to get into that. You might want to talk to some ballistics experts. But rest assured, a guy wearing a vest coming at you, you shoot him with a .308, he's probably going to quit coming at you. Let's just put it that way. But you may also want to consider some frangible ammunition if over-penetration is a big concern of yours with any kind of a rifle that you choose for self-defense. Check into some of the frangible ammo out there, that is, especially even sometimes for pistols, that might be a good idea too. Just please do yourself a favor and do all of us who love firearms and love to use firearms, do us a favor too. If you're going to have to reach for your rifle to defend yourself, just please make doggone sure that it's a necessary thing that you have to do. Just make sure that there is no question that you had to use your rifle in self-defense. Remove all doubt that you needed your rifle. Because it's a serious matter, very serious. I mean, having to shoot a gun at somebody is a very serious thing and shall not be taken lightly. It's a very, very serious and awesome responsibility when you possess that kind of a power and you choose to use it. Please be responsible with your rifles. As I've said many, many times, please don't give the gun haters any more ammo, no pun intended, to use against those of us who enjoy our Second Amendment rights and are willing to use any type of a gun to defend ourselves. So with that said, I am going to go ahead and bring episode number 52 to a close. Thank you for tuning in, folks, and listening to me talk about long guns. Just a quick recap before I let you go. Remember, I would strongly recommend that you have at least one centerfire rifle. And I would strongly recommend a .308, a .223, or a 7.62 caliber. And have a .22 rimfire rifle. .22 rimfire is good to have for cheap practice, good marksmanship practice, and also if you have to shoot some small game. Have a shotgun, and of course, because this is the Handgun World Show, a good handgun or two. With that said, folks, thanks for listening. Shoot safe, shoot straight, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I'm Bob Main. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. Guns and money.